Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
I know it's your favorite time of the week. It's also my favorite time of the week and Chris's favorite time of the week. Right now, it's time for the Decibel Geek Podcast. We're back and we're ready to rock and roll. We do all kinds of different things on this show. A lot of variety is what you get. When you say, I'm Aaron Camaro, as always, and this is my co-host, the coolest friend I know, Mr. Chris Sinzak.
Variety, that's a good word for it. You never know what you're going to get.
It's true, you know, because when we started this podcast way, way back, you know, we said, what do we want to be, you know? And it was like, let's leave it as wide open as possible so that we never get bored with it. We always thought if we put ourselves and say, this is what we do, and we do it every single week, and it's always the same, then after a while, that might get boring. So we decided our show is going to be about everything to do with hard rock and metal music, and so we can do all kinds of different things. So, for example, last week, you got Fresh Blood, 10 brand new kick-ass hard rock and metal bands. In a day and age where everybody says rock is dead, we proved it once again last week. My picks were awesome, I know. Chris, everybody loved your picks. Everybody really always loves Fresh Blood, I think.
Yeah, and it's always fun for us to do, because like, if you're an old school Decibel Geek fan, you probably miss the full songs as much as we do. So yeah. It's a theme we can do where we can get away with the full song thing and not have record companies all over our ass for it. And I think that'll be a long-standing thing going forward. We're always going to do those shows.
Yeah, we've been doing it for a long time. I mean, so like, for example, you know, it wasn't all that long ago we did the best and worst of Led Zeppelin. So of course, we want to talk about the legends of hard rock and metal music, but we also know that it's very important to showcase what's next and what's now, you know, because we've said it a million times, the legends, they're not getting any younger and they're retiring left and right. I mean, Kix just retired a couple of weeks ago, and supposedly Kiss is going to be retiring soon. And Aerosmith is having a hell of a time making it happen. And like I said, just left and right, we're losing the legends. So it's so important to keep it alive and look to the future. And Fresh Blood's always a perfect way to do that. We always appreciate all the feedback you guys give us when we do those, because it's not just for us. It's for the bands. It's for the future of rock music. And we got to keep it alive. So thank you to everybody that commented on all that and got involved and followed the bands. It's beautiful. We're keeping it alive. I know we're doing it. It's so important. So, like I said, we do all kinds of different things. And one thing we did a long time ago that we never really came back to was a thing called Brushes with Greatness. And the idea was, because there's few things in life that are more fun than to hear stories about people you like and admire and would even like to meet yourselves one day, hear stories of other people who have gotten to meet them and what that was like. You know, last time we got a funny story about William Duvall from Alice in Chains. We had a great story about Rick James. And we had a bunch of different guests come on and all share a cool story that they had about a brush with greatness. Well, we've got a friend who's had so many brushes with greatness, he could almost start his own podcast and just call it that and tell stories about all the awesome people he's met throughout his life and could have a podcast that would go on for years and years and years. But today we said, hey, man, do you think you could pick out maybe, you know, 4 or 5 really cool ones to tell us about? And today we're going to be hanging out with Rick Fox as we do Brushes with Greatness with him. And I can only imagine the stories we're going to hear today.
Yeah, I mean, if you've heard Rick on the show for over the years we've done it, and on the live stream, we had a great appearance on our live stream with his KISS-related stories. So he's never short on cool stories to tell, and, you know, Rick has a good career on his own, you know, founding member of Steeler and of Wasp and several other good bands. So it's going to be cool to get into this, but, yeah, so I'm excited to hear what he's got to share with us today.
Heck yeah, me too. So no better time than right now to start getting to it, because we got to take care of the business before we get to have some fun. If you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding. So here we go. We've got a review. Can you believe it? All these weeks in a row, we must be doing something right. People really like us. People care about rock and roll. And they're showing us by leaving us reviews on Apple, giving us Podchaser reviews, and those oh-so-elusive Facebook recommendations. We haven't had one of those in a while. I used to think that was the easy one, but apparently not. Hit us up on there if you're on the Facebook. Give us a recommendation. We like that. This one here is an Apple Podcast review. It's entitled Led Zeppelin's Second Review Show. It's got all 5 stars, and it goes like this. Always look forward to your show every week. Been listening for years. Have to speak up, though. How dare thee besmirch the song Hot Dog. Ha ha! I love that song. I honestly do. What is going on here?
Yeah, that comes from Hot Dog Fanboy podcast.
What the hell? Like, I think when we do that, in my mind, I think, well, this is the most universally accepted worst pick on a Led Zeppelin album that there could ever be. I mean, this song is just awful. It's the worst thing they've ever done. And then you release it to find out people love that weird-ass tune.
Yeah, apparently. Well, Hot Dog Fanboy, sleep with one eye open, buddy, okay? But thank you for listening.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it, and we definitely appreciate the review. That's strange, man. That's weird, but I still love it. If you like something, what the hell? You got to stand up for it, whether anybody else thinks so or not. As it turns out, I guess a few people like the song Hot Dog. Whoever's going to find him and kill him's got their work cut out now, we find out.
Yeah, it's a whole clan of people.
Wild. Just wild. Thank you for that review. We appreciate it very much. Every single one counts for when we go back to our bosses at Pantheon Podcast and say, what do you think, bosses? We're doing a good job? Look at all these reviews and recommendations. And they go, great, boys. Keep up the great work. Because here at Pantheon, all they want to do is promote music podcasts and entertainment podcasts. And so they thought, what's the best way to do this? They would see people and go, what do you know about podcasts? And be like, well, I downloaded a couple. I listened to them. They were garbage. I never listened to podcasts again. And they thought, how could we save people from going through the hassle of having to find their favorite podcasts by going through maybe hundreds of crappy ones? They said, I've got a genius idea. What if we took all the best music podcasts of all different genres, hard rock, heavy metal, country, pop, rap, all the other ones, they're all covered. No matter what you like, Pantheon's got you. So here's what you want to do. You want to check out Pantheon. Easy way to do that is to download their app. Go into your Play Store or whatever you got. Download the Pantheon Podcast app. Scroll on through there. You're going to find new, awesome podcasts. And you're going to go, you know what? This is great. These podcasts have already been vetted for me. I know I'm not getting no bullshit from podcasters that don't know what the hell they're doing. You wait for them. They'll get better someday, and then maybe they can be on Pantheon. But for now, you don't have to take the time to go through all that. You can have the best of the best served right up to you, and that's exactly what Pantheon Podcast does. Simple, easy, they're doing you a favor. Saving you a lot of time. At the end of your life, when you're laying on your deathbed with your family surrounding you, are you going to think, I wish I'd have really explored more of those crappy podcasts? Boy, oh boy, if I could just go back and get some of those hours back. Pantheon, they're extending and saving lives right now. Check them out. Get the app. Find your new favorite podcasts. The best of the best. That's on Pantheon. So, we here at the Decibel Geek Podcast, as you know, We appreciate it very much when you leave us reviews and recommendations. But every time that we come out with a new episode, you're going to find us on the Facebook, you're going to find us on the X, and we're going to announce, hey, it's Brushes with Greatness with the one and only Rick Fox. And rock and rollers that are our friends will see that on their social medias. They'll share it, they'll retweet it, they'll re-X it, whatever the hell it is anymore, I don't even know. But they get the word out about what we've got going on here at the Decibel Geek Podcast. And the cool thing about that is when people do that for us, man, we appreciate it so much. We decided years ago, like, we got to do this. If people are going to help us, we got to give them the recognition they deserve. So a long time ago, we started a thing where when you share and retweet our episode, we will gather your name and put it on a mighty awesome list of people that have done the same thing. Only the most awesome people on the planet. Only the Geeks of the Week.
Geeks of the Week this week are Adam Cox, Rock and Ron Runyon, Kristen Schimbeck, Sean McGinty, Pantheon Podcast, In Obscuria Podcast, Shay Hargett, Lenny Cartwright, Tom Logson, Shane Abair, Aaron Baker, Mike Parnell, Kevin Northern, Jason Warden, Sit and Spin with Joe, Simon Cat, John Phillips, David Glenn, The Plug Podcast, Boris Petrovsky, Kevin Williams, Brent Tibbetts, Bill Elam, Mark Alton Taylor, Freeform Rock Podcast, Mark and Jerry BS Sessions, Jay Shabluski, Ernesto Aguiar, Eladio, Hakan Bergstad, Eric Senzak, Keith Rockford, Vet Halen, Whiting Guitar Works, Gregory Muse, Too Punk to Be a Podcast, Brad Owen, JJ McElhenney, Kevin's on Fire, Focus on Metal, David Cathy, Will Honeycutt, Joseph Capone, Victor Ruiz, Scott Crouch, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. Oh yeah, those are our people. Thank you guys so much for helping us get the word out about what we're doing, rocking and rolling, talking all about it, and having a damn good time doing it with you. And that's what we love. So if I'm ready, I know Chris, you're ready. Let's do it. It's Brushes with Greatness with Rick Fox. Get ready to go. Walking out of my way. I'm not taking a free ride. I'm hard to this concept a long, long time ago because it's so much fun just to sit around with your friends and sometimes you talk about, you know, one time I met this guy, you know, and one time I met this person, you know, and it's always fun to tell and hear these stories all the time. So we came up with a little concept called Brushes with Greatness, and we'd done it once. I think we've only done it once, right?
Yeah, with Richie Rivera.
And it was a lot of fun and it was really cool and everybody liked it, but then for whatever reason, we never went back to doing it again. So we got talking about, like, okay, what kind of stuff can we do coming up? And I said, you know, we never ever went back and did Brushes with Greatness again. And I was thinking, man, you know, I know a guy that's probably got a million brushes with greatness that he could tell us about. And I said to Chris, man, we ought to get Rick Fox on the show to do Brushes with Greatness with us. And man, it all came right together. Rick has been a guest on the show many times in the past, like Chris said with the live stream. Everybody loves Rick Fox. We love Rick Fox. And so, ladies and gentlemen, back on the Decibel Geek Podcast, once again, it's Rick Fox.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. So, yeah, so we gave you a little bit of a warning a few days ago about this, and just so you could. You could, because we said try to pick five, because you've got a million, like Aaron said in the intro, you could probably do an entire podcast series with this theme. Yeah. So I'll just let you take the floor. What do you got for your first one?
Well, as you know, I think I was mentioning when we first discussed this, the term Brushes with Greatness, I think, was first coined on David Letterman. I know it was a late night talk show. I just thought it was Letterman, but it's a great title because a lot of people do it. It happens to a lot of us all the time. I got to say, I probably have a disadvantage over most people because I work in Hollywood in the film industry. So my brushes with greatness happened all the time. Yeah, you know, right. I worked with a lot of actors, you know, and stuff like that. So. Yeah, that was part of my job. Was brushing with greatness was like, you know, an occupational, not a hazard, but it just happened. But well, there's the Hollywood brushes with greatness, and then there's the rock brushes with greatness. And so, well, let's see. Back in New York in the 70s, you know, there was a couple of clubs that I hung out at, and we brushed shoulders with a lot of people from the record industry because they're always out scouting, you know, new talent. It was a club on the Bowery, just a few doors up from CBGB's, and it was called Great Gildersleeve. Mm-hmm. And a lot of mid-range touring bands or bands just starting out with their first album that needed to get used to a bigger stage than like a smaller club stage would play there. So we're rubbing shoulders with the Hell's Angels all the time. But and that's kind of some greatness to capacity. But I was able to rub shoulders there with the late great Felix Pappalardi, who's the bassist for Mountain,
yeah,
and producer of Cream. He was there working with Thor, who I was working with. Yeah. And you know, I received a really great compliment from Felix at one point during our conversation. He goes, you know, it's guys like you that keep making me feel young. I'm really glad to have guys like you around us. And when you can articulate yourself really well to them, that kind of levels the playing field a little bit, breaks the ice a lot. And he shared a secret with me about, you know, how Mountain used to get that ratty, fuzzy overtone out of their amps. And he said, we used to have the roadies would prick pins into the speakers. And then as the speakers would vibrate until they shattered themselves, they would get, you know, that fuzzy, ratty, you know, overdrive sound. And I said, yeah, but then your speakers blow out. He goes, well, we had amps on the side, you know, extra cabinets. As soon as something would pop, we'd just look over at the crew. They'd pull out a cabinet and put another one in his place. And then later on, you know, they'd swap out the speakers and start the whole process over again. Average person doesn't really get to hear or know about, you know, so it's great when they share the little inside, you know, dirt with you on stuff like that.
That's cool.
That's like homemade distortion.
Yeah, exactly. You know, all the secrets of the studio, I guess, and whatnot. Let's see, what else? I had mentioned about when my first meeting with Eric Carr, which was during the Kiss rehearsals at the Palladium. It was supposed to be his debut show in 1980. His first show with them. And at that point, his character was still a hawk.
Yeah.
Right.
And I come walking up the street there to the backstage area, the Palladium. Eric's sitting on the hood of somebody's car. That's what we did a lot back in New York. We always sat on somebody's car. And then my friend Randy, who passed away, Randy Paul, or Randy Rocks, was already in a conversation with Eric. And I came walking up, and he says, hey, I want you to meet my friend. He stuttered a lot. I want you to meet my friend, Rick Fox. And Eric just kind of popped his head back, looked at me. He goes, Rick Fox? I said, yeah. He goes, what a cool name. You know, at least we shook hands like that. And he says, Fox, huh? Fox. Like he was thinking Fox. And, well, as history would bear out, a few nights later was his first show with Kiss, and his character was all of a sudden now a fox. So, you know, coincidence? I don't know.
Wow.
That is weird.
You know, yeah, years later, my first, I was at the Roxy seeing Steeler before I had joined. It was the original Nashville lineup.
Yeah.
And Eric was there. So Eric and I were hanging out. And he had asked me about a girl that I had loosely dated real briefly. And he said, can you set me up with her? And I said, yeah, sure. No problem, like that. And I said, you know, and I told what I just told you about our meeting. And coming up with the character of the fox. And I said, was that based off of my name? And he got this twinkle in his eye, and he just looked at me, and he just smiled, and he winked.
And, wow.
And, so I think, well, he's not here to confirm that, unfortunately.
Right.
But I'd just like to think that that's probably where it happened from. A lot of people would not believe that.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, who are you to him? Why would he use your name to make a character? I ran through that with the Vinnie Vincent thing. But why would Vinnie take your material? So, you know, people are gonna be out there, but say that. But
yeah,
everyone else enjoys the story, so why not?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I bet you he ran immediately inside, right up to Gene, and says, "I don't want to be a chicken. I want to be a fox."
You know, he didn't do that when I was standing there, but that he may have contemplated that after he did go in. I don't know.
The hawk thing was what they wanted to do, and then he looked ridiculous in the costume. And you know, we had Pixie on the show, who was their wardrobe person, and she was helping out try to figure it out. And they were like kind of stumped on what to come up with till the last minute. So. Could have played into it. You never know.
It made the makeup idea much more organic and fluid.
Right.
I mean, what did he have for a hawk? Was he going to wear a beak?
His makeup looked like a beak, and like he had a big furry chest piece. There's photos out there of it. He looked like Big Bird, basically.
Yeah, it's not cool.
It one way or another, it worked out for the best anyway, and that was a good character for him. So. And the girl that I introduced him to wound up becoming the model on the cover of the Poison album, Open Up and Say Ah. The red.
Oh, that was Bambi.
Bambi,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, Virginia. Yeah. So, and Virginia was the one that got me in trouble in Wasp. When I went to bring her back to Blackie's house, not knowing that he had already tried to pick her up earlier in the evening in the club, and she told him no.
Oh.
And I didn't know that. His mate bringing her back to the house. And he's got to see the girl that told him no. And this was confirmed by Randy Piper later. He said, "That's why you got kicked out of Wasp, because you brought a couple of girls back to the house, you know, that he wanted to bring home, and they told him no."
Oh, man.
So Bambi confirmed that. She goes, "Did he try to pick you up earlier in the evening?" She goes, "Yeah, I told him to get lost."
Oh, my God.
I went, "Oh, man." So that's where that came from.
Man.
You know.
Wow. Uh-huh. Love on the rocks. She's a mighty shot. Love on the rocks.
So let me move on here. So I had a friend whose uncle worked one of the follow spots at the Palladium in New York. So she used to get in free all the time. And we became friends, and she said, "My uncle working, I get you in for free if you want." I said, "Sure." So I was getting in the Palladium, like, for free, all these shows, you know, and like that. So one of the shows, well, I got to see Heart, I saw Stars, Cheap Trick, I saw Van Halen.
Nice.
You know, their first tour out at the Palladium. I still got David Lee Roth's towel. We'll circle back to that in a minute.
And that was the tour that Robert Fleischman was the opener, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
I think he was opening for them on that tour.
Yeah, I really don't remember. The excitement was all about Van Halen, so I don't remember who opened for him. But one of the shows that I was sitting down front was for Pat Travers. And it was, you know, the Boom Boom Out Goes the Lights tour.
Yeah.
And he had Mars Cowling on bass, Tommy Aldridge on drums, and Pat Thorell on guitar. Nice. I'm sitting, like, right down front. You know, I mean, I'm making eye contact with these guys. I'm like, wow. You know, just coming out like gangbusters. You know, there was a lot of energy coming out of a Pat Travers show, no doubt. And so, cut to 1983. I'm now in Steeler. Our first show, we're debuting the new lineup, and we're opening for Hughes Thrall.
All right. Yeah.
So while we're doing the show, I happen to look over in my peripheral vision on the right hand side where you come onto the stage, the stage door. There's Pat Thrall standing there with his mouth open watching Malmsteen, you know, as the rest of the crowd in the house were watching. And after the show, I got to go over to talk to Pat Thrall. He was very approachable. And I don't know why I never got to meet up and talked to Glenn Hughes. The night was a blur and like that. And so I said, he goes to me, where did you get this guy from? And I said, Mike Varney found him out of Sweden in his guitar spotlight column like that. And he goes, I've never seen anything like this before. And I said, you know, let me throw this at you for a second. You know, a few years ago, the late 70s, probably 78, 79, I saw you guys at the Palladium with Pat Travers. I was down the front, as I just told you the story. And he looked back, up, he looks at me and goes, that's where you look familiar from.
Nice.
He actually remembered, you know, I mean, I had the Punky hair, Punky Meadows hairstyle. So it's pretty hard to you know, forget that, I guess. And he goes, yes, I remember you now. I said, and here we are years later. I'm looking at you up on the stage like a rock god. And here, a couple of years later, we're sharing the same stage. Isn't that fucking incredible?
It's amazing.
You know, it's like a fan to a hero kind of. And again, the playing field got leveled for a moment. Right. There. It was really, really nice. And I, you know, Pat was, he's a really, really nice guy like that. And we kind of laughed about it. And I said, oh, and by the way, I have both of your Automatic Man albums. And he just kind of went, oh, man, thank you so much. Because there, I was a side project he had, and it was like progressive space rock. Pyramids and aliens, you know, and stuff on the album, and that kind of thematic spacey. It was kind of a funky, jazzy space stuff. Mike Shreve, the drummer from Santana, was played on that. And I say, you know, and when you approach an artist who releases an album like that, it doesn't really sell a lot, you know, or to the mainstream and do really well. To tell them that you own their album, their product, that kind of really makes their moment, you know, for them. I did the same with Ken Hensley at the NAMM show. You know, I've been a Uriah Heep fan from like 72. And I saw them in Central Park at the Schaefer Music Festival. So to meet Ken Hensley at the NAMM show, and I told him, you know, what a massive Uriah Heep fan I was. I said, you probably hear that a million times a day from everybody. He was working as a representative for St. Louis Music Supply. And Ampeg amps and whatnot. And I said, next year, if you're going to be here, I'm going to bring your solo album and I'm going to have you sign it for me. He's like, yeah. Okay. Sure. Like that. Like, again, he probably hears that a million times. The next year I showed up at NAMM. I had his solo album, Proud Words on a Dusty Shelf. And he goes, so you're the other person that bought that, huh? And he looked at it and you could see the tears welling up in his eyes. And that was such a moving moment for both of us, you know, and he signed it and I still have it. And he just, you know, thank you so much for actually, he goes, I didn't remember. I forgot from last year. This was going to happen. So it was a nice touching moment for both of us. I live for moments like that. When you can look at your heroes and they can, like I said, it's just one of those moments that levels the playing field. You're just two guys. You're just two people. You're not like star and fan, you know. Right, so it's a really, those are magic moments.
Or you'll lose your ride. Do you want to stand in a line, fighting hard to hold on to your mind.
Heck yeah, man, that's awesome.
And so circling back to David Lee Roth, after the show at the Palladium, I went through the dressing room. I snagged his towel, which I still have.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
It's still a little white towel, you know, bar towel. But when I first arrived in L.A., that first night that Blackie took me out, we went to the Troubadour, and David Lee Roth was there hanging out in the crowd with everybody.
Wow.
You know, at the front bar. I don't know if you ever had a chance to visit the Troubadour, but like that. A little while later, Blackie grabs me. He goes, "Let's go up to the Rainbow." These is all new to me. I've seen him in magazine, Roxy magazine, but it's my first time, you know, seeing them up close. So we walk into the Rainbow. There's Punky Meadows. There's Michael Diamond from Legs Diamond. They both remembered me and said, "Hi, what are you doing here?" And I said, "I'm auditioning for Blackie's band." And he said, "Well, good luck with that." Blackie got us a table, and within 20 minutes, who comes walking in with that big, big smile? David Lee Roth, like, "I own the room," you know, walking in, and he comes down the aisle, and he looks at us, and he sits at our table. Nice. And I look at Blackie, and I look at Dave. That David Lee Roth grin that he always had. It was like 24/7, that grin was on, you know, and just like he does on stage. And I'm thinking to myself, pinch me. I mean, how often does this happen to somebody? David Lee Roth sits down at their table.
Wow.
You know, like, "I'm here for the duration." Yada, yada, yada.
I was going to say, what kind of word salad did you get served up by David Lee Roth at that time?
Like his typical speaking, like, "Hey, how you guys doing? Well, I'm here. Let's own the room, guys. Come on. I'm here." You know, like that. And then when a year or so later, when my band Sin was playing the Troubadour, our first lineup, and it was freaking packed, I had no idea that many people were going to show up for us. And Dave comes up into the dressing room, and he's looking at me up and down. He's giving, you know, checking out my outfit or something. I said, "So what brings you here?" And he goes, "Well, I heard a lot about you guys. I want to come check you out. You ain't got a buzz going on." So, And I'm like, I just happened to notice how he was just inspecting what I was wearing. And my outfit was, you know, essentially black spandex and black fabric with red cut shredded stuff all over it, which I borrowed that idea from the Police video of Synchronicity 2 opens up with the camera pulling back and Sting is hanging from a wire and all his clothes look like they've been bomb blasted and shredded. And I went, what a great concept if you could get a whole band to look like that, which I did. And I designed all our Sin costumes. Each guy had his own color. You know, I had red. One guy had white. Another guy had blue. Another guy had purple. Frank Starr wore whatever he wanted. that was okay. But like a couple of weeks later, Van Halen's video for Jump comes out on MTV. And I'm sitting there with my mouth open going, "Jesus Christ, look what he's wearing. He's got half of my outfit on. He's got the black pants with the red shredded fabric hanging all over it and a torn shirt." And I'm like, these guys just don't miss a trick, do they? You know, and it was a famous interview where Roth said, "I put my hat on and I pull up my collar and I just blend in and I walk around and I look at this and I see that." And he gets all of these ideas and goes back, and I guess that's what he did after he saw my outfit. So, you know, this stuff happened. They're big bands. They're costume designers come to the clubs. They see what the up and coming moving and shaking bands are wearing. Yeah. And then they go back and they redesign. They adapt some of that. Then things you see, Kiss is wearing like claw reflectors and shredded fabric and, you know, bits and pieces of every conglomerations of everybody's outfits. And then the bands in the clubs get accused of stealing from them.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, I was friends with some of the costume designers, you know, for Ozzy and Kiss and Fleur Thiermeyer. I knew these people, so I knew they were coming to the clubs. Mm. But you know, then you see the culmination of it in the bigger stars, the A-list guys wearing variations of what you were wearing.
I don't know.
You know?
I remember C.K. Lent's book, Kiss and Sell. He was managing them during the Crazy Nights era, and they said it actually became a joke around the office because the mantra around the office was, did Bon Jovi do it? And that was always the basis for all of their decisions going forward. So, I mean, a lot of the older bands were doing that. They'll try to latch on.
The variation of, what would Jesus do?
Yeah.
Did Bon Jovi do it? So some years later, while I was in Surgical Steel, I had just missed the taping for the hearing aid. We're Stars, mm-hmm. And I guess I wasn't high up in their circle, but during the Sacred Heart tour came through L.A. I used to get a lot of passes for a venue called Irvine Meadows, which was in Orange County, right next to Lion Safari. A lot of people from Hollywood did not want to go all the way down Orange County to see the concerts. So subsequently, there would be a lot of passes left over. And I was friends with some of the girls that worked at the ticketing agencies. And they'd say, they would come in for free at our shows, so we'd reciprocate, and they'd give me backstage passes for Irvine. And so I got passes for Dio, and we're hanging out backstage. And at some point during the show, Wendy Dio comes running up, grabs me by my left elbow. Come on, come on, come on. Let's go, let's go, let's go. And you, come on, let's go. And you, and she's grabbing all of us band guys from Hollywood, whoever was standing around there. And she takes us around the backstage area, and underneath all the scaffolding, we come out of the castle turret on Jimmy Bain's side, and I look up, and there's Claude Schnell up in the keyboards and like that, and there's like guys from Poison, and Nader from London, and everybody from Hollywood who was there. We're all on stage, and Ronnie says we're going to do the first live rendition of We're Stars, and all anybody had to do was just say, We're Stars, but I'm in the. And so me and the guys from Poison and Nader were on Jimmy Bain's mic, and everybody else was kind of spread out all over the other microphones. And it was like, wow, now going to see a band at Irvine is one thing, but actually being on stage and looking at it from the other perspective, it's marveling like that. So that was my first time performing on stage with Dio, being able to do that. And What happened was the very next weekend – Ronnie was still in town. Rough Cut was playing at the Country Club. And as usual, everybody and their mother was there up in the VIP balcony. He did it again. He grabbed everybody from the VIP balcony, brought us all down on stage. And I pictured this. And we all kind of, they pushed us up around Ronnie. And we repeated the whole thing, the We're Stars live. And I happened to be between Vince Neil and Ronnie and Jeff LaBar. Tom Hardy, I think, from Stormer, like that. And when it came to the chorus, Ronnie, everybody's taller than Ronnie. Ronnie looks up at me with his own mic, shoved it in my face, and goes, "Sing!" and I could actually hear myself singing over his mic, over the house. So that was my second time.
Wow.
That was like a hallmark, being able to perform. I'm standing right next to Ronnie friggin' Dio.
Yeah,
and he's shoving his mic in my face. That's probably one of the greatest brushes with greatness, I think, especially for a Dio fan.
Sure.
To have like that.
Did any of that either of those shows get filmed with those performances?
I'm glad you asked. I was told they were. I was friends with the office manager at Niji. He passed away some years ago. He told me that Wendy has that stuff in the vault. If or when it's ever going to be released is anybody's guess.
Right.
But he said, yeah, that we got footage of it. And and on YouTube, a very rare audio only was released of the one from Irvine, I think. And it's when I first heard it some years ago, the quality wasn't that bad. Then it disappeared off of YouTube. And then I found it again, and the quality was like crap. It was horrible. Still crackly and staticky and breaking up and like that. So I don't know what happened with that. And I don't know why Wendy is holding out on releasing that, because, I mean, God, you know, we'd all love to see that. In 88, when I had Thunderball, we were managed by a guy named Ken Rubin. Kenny handled all of the artists and the billboard advertising over the Rainbow and the Roxy, amongst many other things that he did. And he was our manager when we got the nationally released Western Union commercial that we did as Putrid Rage.
I'm calling about your band, Putrid Rage. You better send money. They're trashing my stage.
You send someone money fast, come to Western Union. We'll make sure it gets to any of our 13,000 locations, usually in 15 minutes or less.
Keep in touch.
Western Union, the fastest way to send money.
My brother and I used to love that commercial when we were kids, seeing you guys smashing the guitars and stuff.
Yeah, that was us. That was Thunderball.
Wow.
And so at that time, Kenny was also managing... Oh, what the hell is his name? Just a Hendrix tribute. Randy Hanson. Mm. Randy Hanson has been doing a Jimi Hendrix impression tribute for decades. A really good one, too. Turns out Randy was the main guitar player for Sam Kennison's band. So I get a call on a Sunday afternoon. Kenny goes, you want to play with Sam? Yeah, okay. He goes, get down to the China Club right now. Now. So I got a ride from my roommate. We zoomed over to the China Club, and I met Sam. He and Sam and I had seen each other like at other shows, after shows and parties and things like that when he was like wired. But he kind of remembered my face a little bit. And I said, I was told I could come down here and play with you. And Randy Hanson came over and said, yeah, Sam, this is the, you know, they set it up. And this is Rick Fox, and he's going to, you know, play with us. So Sam goes, you want to do the early show or the late show? I said, I'll do the second show. He goes, all right, great. So they did an early show. Then it was an intermission. Everybody's downstairs in the green room, the bar, and hanging out, blah, 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 like that. And little by little, people started to filter out of there. And I guess I was engaged in a conversation with somebody I didn't know. I start to hear the music through the floor, the band playing. So I run upstairs with my bass, and I'm standing on the side of the stage, or on the stage left, and Jimmy Bain is playing bass in my spot. I don't know how that happened. But, you know, Jimmy was a well-loved and totally networked player.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, yeah. And so he's going to have, you know, priority in things like this. So fortunately, the bass tech on stage left was a friend of mine. He looked over at me and he did a double take. He goes, you're supposed to be up there right now. I said, I know. Nobody told me anything when it was going to happen. He goes, all right, one minute, like that. They finished the song. He runs up the stairs, grabs Jimmy by the shoulders, brings him over to the stairs, and Jimmy's like, as usual, three sheets to the wind. He brings him down the stairs, unplugs his bass, plugs me in, gets him picked by my shoulders, pushes me up the stairs, and goes, go. I go up the stairs, and I look down at Jimmy. Jimmy's like totally bewildered, going, what's happening, man? What happened? What happened? What's going on, man? Like that. Oh. And I look over, and Sam looks back at me. I look up at Sam. Sam goes, you ready? Give me the thumb up. Ready? And I said, yeah. And we launched into Wild Thing.
Oh, we all got some kind of wild thing that went through our lives and made it hell. Because everybody's had one, you, me, nobody likes to lose. And you know she's out there laughing at you. I don't care if it was last week or third grade. Someone broke your heart. What was her name? I'll never forgive you.
And it, again, it was one of those monumental Hallmark pinch me moments because, you know, I mean, that's fairly well known in the Hollywood scene as far as, you know, being a player with a lot of the bands and stuff. I look across the stage and it's Randy Hansen on, all the way on stage right next to him. And get your pen and make a list out. Little Steven Van Zandt on guitar. Randy Castile on drums,
nice.
From Ozzy and Lita Ford. Jean Beauvoir from, you know, Drums Along the Mohawk,
yeah.
with his big white mohawk and on a guitar. There was a keyboard player named Robin something. I don't remember who he was. And a very inebriated John Goodman on blues harp.
John Goodman.
Wow.
John Goodman, as big as he was, you know, before he lost all the weight. And I mean, you could tell the guy was tall. Holy, he wasn't stoned. He was drunk.
Yeah.
I guess he was trying to do a Blues Brothers thing. And him and Sam are trading off harmonica, guitar. So we're just kind of going with the flow of the whole thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's like, that's like my other hallmark of brushes with greatness. I mean, it's just, wow. You know, to be able to have the opportunity to share the stage with such great, massive talent like that has to be. Definitely a category in your brushes with greatness,
man. So, that's super cool.
Those are some of my high points.
How was John Goodman? Pretty nice guy.
Yeah. He was nice. Like I said, he was really drunk, but he was nice. I'm surprised he made it down the stairs off the stage. But, you know, and I don't recall seeing Jimmy after that the rest of the night. You know, there must have been a million friggin' cameras going off. It was like stars at night. Thousands of flashes of cameras. I don't have picture one of me and Sam playing on stage.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I have one shot picture of him and I downstairs in the green room, and he's got his arm around me, and he's doing, you know, the Sam Kinison face like that with the head scarf on his head, and that's it. I people have told me, oh, I got pictures. I just got to dig them out. This is like a couple of decades ago. I never got, you know.
Man, when that Wild Thing video was on MTV, Sam Kinison, for a little while there, was like the biggest star in America at the time.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
so big.
Yeah. And that also tied into his stage routine about breaking up with the girlfriend. I want all my records back. and you're a bitch from hell and all this. No, the heartache about breaking up with somebody.
Oh, man.
So that ties in. That's why Wild Thing would have been great. And, you know, it would have been even better if Jessica Hahn showed up, but she wasn't there. So.
Yeah, she's pretty unforgettable in that video, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, her, Jessica Hahn and Sam Kinison both come from fundamental Christian backgrounds.
Yeah.
And right. have rebelled against, you know, that part of the church. So
yeah, apparently he was like a full-on preacher before he got into comedy.
And so was his dad, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm still friends with his brother, Bill. Mm-hmm. So we just, you know, we're loosely, hi, how you doing? And happy anniversary on this, or, you know, remembering like on the day when Sam died, we'll post a little tribute or something like that. But so that was just, you know, I'm glad I was able to have people say you're like the Forrest Gump of rock and roll.
That was mine. I came up with that.
These key places when things, certain important events happened. I said, you know, if you remember Saturday Night Live, Rich Hall had a character that used to do that as one of his routines. He'd walk around with a shopping bag and a raincoat, and whenever there was something like really important happening, he'd kind of like pop his head in from the side of the frame, like Forrest Gump did, you know, in the movie. He'd stick his head in front of the cameras in the frame of whatever was being filmed at the time. But so, yeah, you know, being in key points at certain points in history is I'm just grateful for the opportunity to have been in these places at that time.
I've always wondered, have you ever met the other Rick Fox, the player for the Lakers?
No. And, you know, I reached out, I contacted their office one time, and I said, look, we both know his real name is Ulrich.
Oh, is it?
He just shortens it to Rick, and he spells it differently. I said, look, I made my name in Hollywood, in L.A., long before he even arrived in Los Angeles. It's a lot of confusion. Is there anything we can do to clarify that confusion? I must have got some young intern on the phone, and he goes, no. You know, yeah. And I got pretty much dismissed. Hmm. He had no idea who I was. I had, you know, I didn't have, you know, a higher type of management representation to do these protocols correctly or properly. I have a habit of just kind of taking the reins and doing stuff myself, yeah. You know, like that. To answer your question, no, I never met him. He's not as out there in public now as he used to be. But whenever you do like an internet search for Rick Fox, and if you type in R-I-K-F-O-X, underneath that, it'll say, did you mean R-I-C-K-F-O-X?
Well, in fairness, Rick, I think you have a better jump shot than he does.
A better jump shot?
Yeah.
Have you seen me try and do a jump shot?
No, it's just a guess. You should have just challenged him to a game of one-on-one, and whoever wins gets to keep the name.
Well, he would win hands down.
That's where you had to challenge him to a base-off.
Yeah.
There we go. There we go. Base-off. But yeah, his real full name, first name is Ulrich, like Mars. What's his face? Lars, not Lars. What am I thinking of? But yeah, it's Ulrich is more of like a German name,
right? So. Like Uli John Roth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You call him Uli, but it's Ulrich.
Ulrich, yeah. So he just shortens it to Rick Fox. And I'm
Uli
Rick
Fox.
Yeah. Well, I actually met Uli Roth too at NAMM.
Did you?
Yeah.
When I was playing with, Kevin Ray had a band, White Lie, and we were playing a lot of times down in Orange County at one of the clubs down there, and that was one of the clubs they would have NAMM show bands play at. It was tied into NAMM, and Uli was headlining at this club. And so I went over to talk to him, and I said, we have something in common. He goes, what's that? I said, Ingvae Malmsteen. he busted up laughing. and that leveled the playing field pretty quick. So I have a picture of him and I talking, and we're laughing about this. And I said, well, we're supporting you later on tonight at the club, such and such club. He goes, all right, so, you know, we'll look forward to that. And so we got to share the stage, not at the same time, but, you know, we played, and then Willie went on right after us, so that was nice too.
Did you ever hang out with Jeff Scott Soto and share Ingvae stories?
I knew Jeff before he played with Malmsteen, and of course we talked afterwards. And I can't say that he had anything much nice to say about it. Yeah. And the same thing with point is, I bumped into several of Malmsteen's former singers, and we all share some of those similar stories. Graham Bonnet. At NAMM, I walked up to Graham. I said, we have something in common. He goes, what's that? I said, Malmsteen. And he rolled his eyes and laughed and told me the story about the night when Malmsteen grabbed him by the throat and was choking him.
Yeah, he was trying to kill him.
Yeah, shit. He accidentally tripped over the guitar cord and pulled it out of the guitar. And afterwards, Malmsteen went up to Graham and by the throat and put him up against the wall. And he said, "You do that again, I'll friggin' kill you." And then the security guy comes over. He goes, "No, you're not." And he puts Malmsteen in a headlock. Wow. And he just like a lobster claw, just squeezed on the neck. You know, Malmsteen let go. And that was the night Malmsteen got fired. And Andy Truman went with him.
Mm, what a guy.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you know how to pick interesting guitar players to be around.
I guess. Well, I didn't pick him. So, you know, speaking of Dio, again, at NAMM, I wanted to walk over to Vinnie Appice. You know, this is when Tara was still alive. And she was taking all these pictures because I had played on a couple of tracks with this guy, Jim Crane, out of Buffalo, New York.
Yeah.
On his album, London Fog. I played on two songs that Vinnie Appice played drums on. We did a song with Frank Domino, an Angel song, Don't Take Your Love. And we did a song called Broken. And I went over to Vinnie. I said, "Hey, you know," with to shake his hand. I just wanted to say it was such an honor and a privilege to be able to play on a couple of cuts with you. He goes, "What cuts?" I said, "You played on the Jim Crean album, right?" He goes, "Well, I play on a lot of them." I said, "Yeah." I said, "You play? We recorded on Broken and Don't Take Your Love." And he looks at me. He goes, "That was you?" Like, he didn't even know who the bass player was
right
on these tracks. I said, "Yes, we played together. I mean, not in the same room. You know, it was all done with everybody mails the files back and forth. That emails the tracks."
Yeah.
Right.
But I said, "Yeah." I said, that's me playing on Broken with you and Don't Take Your Love. He just kind of had this. He was stunned, I guess. I've never seen anybody respond to something like that. And I guess he didn't even know. So, you know, he said, "Well, let's, you know," we took a couple of pictures and that was it. And that was my Vinnie Appice moment with greatness, I guess.
I suppose, like you say, he does that all the time. So, I mean, if he's always, you know, recording stuff, mailing it in, maybe it dawned on him, he's like, "You know, I probably don't know half the bass players that I've been a rhythm section with over the years on these albums."
You know, yeah, but when you're going to be put on a project like that, you generally know in advance who all the players are. Right. And Crean told me, I had an uncomfortable meeting with Vinny some years before that at NAMM. You know, when I had gone up to him to shake his hand, I said, "Hi, I'm Rick Fox," you know, like that. He looks at me, he goes, "Yeah, and?" That was like totally dismissive. And it didn't dawn on me at that moment to tell him that I was in Burn when he was playing with Vinny, with Ronnie. Burn was under Niji's management. After Sin broke up, I got the gig with a band called Burn. Well, Kurt Lorraine was the manager under Wendy Dio. Wendy was managing Rough Cut and Ronnie. Kurt was managing Burn. I got the gig with Burn. I replaced their bass player, Bill Sweet. And so I was kind of in the Niji family, if you will. And it didn't dawn on me to tell, you know, Vinny that I was part of the Niji management family. I don't know if that would have made any never mind with him at that point. But, you know, it was just weird to have him kind of like dismissively just kind of blow me off, going, "Yeah, and?" So I didn't bring that up. Years, you know, later at the NAMM show, when I told him that I played with him on the Crean stuff. So,
all right.
There's been some really odd, awkward moments as well. So I guess they go hand in hand with all the good stuff.
Too. Sure.
So yeah, of
course.
They
shouldn't, but they did happen.
One thing I was going to ask you about, and it's for some reason it's become, I guess, fodder for news sites this past week with like Don Dokken talking about how the rest of the band was doing a lot of blow and he didn't, so he didn't fit in with the guys. And I think it was Joey Allen from Warrant was saying, you know, or Eric Turner saying that the partying's not what it was back in the 80s like it used to be. So you were, you know, right in the middle of that whole scene. Did you partake in the partying, or were you an outsider of that? And did you see like really horrible abuse of drugs when you were in that scene?
I have to say I was an outsider. There was that whole, once the bands in the 80s really started to take off and were all touring a lot with each other, then there was the formation of their little clique called Party Ninjas. And you had your Motley Crue guys, your Alan Krieger, guys from House of Lords. Who else? Ozzy. God, you put Motley Crue and Ozzy together, and it's like it's going to be dynamite. You know, yeah. No matter where it is. And they would have these when they get off the road, and they still have that adrenaline from being on the road, and they're not playing. So they would go to clubs and hang out, and they'd get in a back room somewhere, and they'd open up, and there's half of Peru, and they're going, you know, snorting up everything. And that's kind of what I remember the most about these Party Ninjas guys. So, you know, they're all obviously validated to each other on the same level, their A level, whatever it is. And I wasn't there. I was below that. So I didn't party with a lot of these guys. And perhaps it's for the better health-wise. But I probably missed out on a lot of potential opportunities of being able to jam with or play and get into their net click network had I been part of that. But I've seen a lot of it. They'd show up at all the jams in LA and Hollywood, whoever was putting on an all-star jam. And I would be told, come on down, bring your bass, come on down. And I'm telling you, there was a jam called New York City, NYC jam. And it was put on by a guy who was Alita Ford's guitar tech at the time. I can't remember his name. Big heavy set guy. And they said, come on, bring it. And guys, Black and Blue Jamie was there, and Mitch Perry, all these guys. And I would sit in the dressing room watching a parade of performers go past me, on the stage, off the stage, on the stage, off the stage. And I sat there, I'm telling you, all night with my bass in the dressing room, and I never got called up once. And you look back and you go, okay, well, who are the bass players involved in this? Now, no disrespect. That being said, the two main guys that were anchoring the rhythm section for all of these jams were Jimmy Bain and Phil Soussan. And they would just interchange themselves back and forth, Jimmy and Phil. And no other bass players get to go up there and play. They'd swap out drummers and singers and guitar players and blah, 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 blah. But those two guys would just rotate. And I would never get a chance to play. And some of these Party Ninja jams, I'd be sitting there all night with my bass, with my thumb up my ass. And by the end of the, you know, Jamie St. James comes back and goes, hey, when are you going up? I said, I don't know. Nobody's called me. You know, he goes, I'm just sitting here. And this would happen on, you know, several occasions. So I was never part of the inside inner circle of the Party Ninjas. And I just watched it. I was like an outside observer.
Yeah,
you know, it's like George Carlin says, it's a club and you're not a member, you know,
right?
You're not allowed in. It's a private club.
But never a temptation to snort a little or get into that scene.
I dabbled. Yeah, and back in when I was playing the Jersey club scene with E. Walker, we were playing six nights a week, four or five sets a night. And a couple of one or two of the clubs were, you know, we were like house regulars there. The whole staff loved us. They loved the band. I was a new guy in the band. I replaced their other bass player. I replaced a lot of guys in my career. And so after, the bars in New York would close at 4 a.m. So after the club would close and we're packing our stuff out the back door, and every once in a while, one of the staff would go, hey, Rick, you want some beer? I'm like, sure. Here's a case, Molson. So I was getting free cases of Molson out the back door every week. I had like, at any time, I had 6 to 8 cases under my window in my kitchen, you know, in my Jersey apartment. But they would have after parties at somebody's house in the area around where the club was. And of course, everybody, all the guys, the bouncers, the bartenders, they all had their own little stash of blow. And they're like, Rick, come here. You know, get a corner and, you know, do a little bit. And then I'd be walking around and somebody else from the club, here, come here. You know, and I didn't have a car at the time. So it was really interesting for me to play six nights a week with a band that was playing all over Jersey and upstate New York. And I didn't have a car. So I would rely on various people to give me a ride back and forth to my apartment or pick me up and like that. And I had a whole network of people that would be able to drive me. I was so fortunate, you know, and 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning, daylight's coming. I can't sleep. I'm wired. And, you know, I can only do that for so long. You know, the guys in the band were pot smokers. Mm. I didn't partake in that. No. I cannot get into the whole stoned mentality.
But these not guys,
you know, we'd sit in a dressing room, they'd light up a joint, and they'd get hammered and go on stage and play. And I just couldn't do that, you know. So I was never 100% one of the boys in the band either, because I didn't party with them like that. So there's the opportunity to party, but I declined because I didn't want to smoke pot.
Yeah.
Well, in hindsight, you should be commended for that, I would think, because, I mean, it's probably helped you in the long run.
Oh, yeah.
Well, don't get me wrong. I wasn't a saint.
Well, I'm not saying that, but you didn't get lost in it, though.
I did some psychedelics in high school.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's where the Martian rock band idea came from?
No, that wasn't. They were already in existence. But,
okay.
You know, I dabbled in it in high school, you know. I was the only underclassman from my freshman year until I was a senior, all 4 years, to be able to have access to the senior smoking lounge, because I was hip enough to have copies of underground comics, Zap Comics, Mr. Natural, all this stuff. And all the seniors were hip to that. Anybody who was involved in the drug culture in high school knew what the underground comics were. Robert Crumb, all that stuff,
yeah.
You know, and so they would see my comics and go, hey, can I borrow this, like, for the next period? And my comics were being passed all around the senior class. And I started to figure out, you know what? You want to borrow my comics? Give me access to the senior lounge. He went, okay, done. So, you know, when the dean would walk around, he goes, you see, what are you doing in here? You're not supposed to be in here. And I just point over to the seniors and I went, he's okay. He's with us. So I was able to finagle at the, I was hipper than most of my other classmen around me, like nice. That. So now that's where the dabbling in the psychedelics came from. And I tried mescaline, and you know there was the other, you know, Purple Haze, Double Barrel Sunshine, Blue Cheer, you know, these little tab stuff. And you know, and 12 hours later, you're like in another universe. but it was interesting. I'm glad I survived that.
Yeah,
you know. But as far as heavy stuff, no, I never did any really heavy stuff. That was too scared to get involved in that crap.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was never. I mean, I smoked pot a little bit in high school. But pot in 1970, 71, 72, pot was pure. It was you know, so organic, and that the high was so mellow. You weren't like stupid stoned. You know, years later, everybody starts dabbling, putting stuff in it, and it you know, poison and toxic crap, and you know, and it's like it wasn't the same thing, you know. So, I you know, I got out of that. It just didn't do anything for me. So, but yeah, I had my moments of experimentation. be that as it may, but yeah, no, not Holly. I didn't do that much blow in Hollywood. You know, I knew what it was for what it was. I might do it once here or once there, but not on a regular basis at all. I figure if I got to run a band and I got to make decisions, I got to have my head about me.
Yeah.
And I've seen what it does to some people. It makes them stupid and crazy and irrational. I'm like, no, I you know what? I there's more important things to spend money on besides drugs. That was basically my bottom line, like that. So.
And can you imagine Rick Fox on coke?
No, I don't want to imagine that.
You know, well, Tara told me we had moments of, you know, of open honesty and stuff, and told me that when she was hanging out in the club before we got together, that, you know, she had a problem with blow, and she actually enlisted herself into a program, you know, in a hospital to get herself off of it, which was great. But her girlfriends said she could do so much blow and you'd never knew she was on it. She did not act like the average person who's on blow like that. You said the only way you could tell she was on blow is she would never blink.
That's a lot of blow.
Her eyes would just be open, but she wasn't speedy or active or hyper. You know, so I didn't know that until after she passed and they told me that. He said, yeah, she just wouldn't blink. It was freaky.
Yeah.
So, but
I'm guessing Blackie was a sober dude.
No, not completely.
No.
When I first got there at his apartment, his car wasn't working. And he was broke. He didn't. I don't remember where he got the money from to fly me out to California. But he would usually rely on Mike Stalin to drive us everywhere. And we would stop at Turner's Liquor Store, right next to Barney's Beanery on Santa Monica Boulevard. He would buy a little pint of vodka, and like I said, New Yorkers do. He'd sit on the hood of a car. And he'd sit there little by little, slowly, and down that whole pint of vodka just to get his buzz on. He goes, why should I go to a club and spend like extravagant amounts of money on overpriced drinks? You know, when I could just buy this for less than half the price. And he would finish the little pint of it, whatever, and throw a bottle out. And then we'd go up to the clubs. So that was, he was a drinker. He drank vodka. And I can't, I mean, me being Polish, I can't drink vodka. That's a Polish drink. But he drank the stuff straight. Now just like, ugh. So, I guess once he got the taste of power, he must have stopped. You know, when Rod Smallwood came in, maybe even before that.
Yeah.
Again, you know, when you try to run a band, you got to have your head, your wits about you. And he had his hands full with Tony and Chris.
Well, I'll say Chris Holmes probably did his share.
Oh, and your share and your share, and my share. And his share. I mean, no disrespect to Chris. He's a sweetheart.
But, oh, he is. But yeah, but he definitely knew how to tie one on.
Oh, and make sure you couldn't untie it.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, you know, and yeah, Tony drank and did drugs. So not so much while I was playing with him. But Tony just always had that expression on his face. He just always looked like he was stoned. You know, it was just the expression, his natural expression was like that. Like,
Every picture I saw of that guy, he looked like an absolute maniac.
Yeah.
He was a maniac on drums. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
He was a total immersion body drummer. He hit those drums, they were like cannons.
That you can't argue with that first Wasp record. I mean, it's a hell of an album.
Yeah, yeah. His drums were an acrylic green. Like Bonham had the acrylic amber color, mm-hmm. and Zeppelin. Tony had an acrylic green, a really eerie looking, like a swampy green, cool. And we showed up at rehearsal one time, and Randy's whole rehearsal room, the whole facility smelled like paint. Tony had just finished painting the insides of all of his drum shells black. So you had this even swampier greenish black color of his drums, and we're rehearsing, and the whole place stinks like paint. But he painted all his green drums black on the inside.
That's interesting.
Well, man, this has been freaking awesome. I knew it when we said, you know, we could get a bunch of different people to do this, or we could just get Rick Fox.
Yeah.
Rick will speak for everyone.
Yeah, you know, and your brushes with greatness are freaking awesome. And like I said, you know, there's a lot of people that you've listed that I would say, and I'm sure a lot of listeners would say, man, I'd love to have met that person, or I'd love to meet that person. And it's always cool to hear the stories of somebody else that's got to do it. And, you know, Rick Fox, you make friends everywhere you go. I think it's easy for you because you are easily one of the most stylish mofos I've ever seen in my entire life. When people see Rick Fox, they go, who is that guy? I want to meet him. I want to go talk to him. So I knew you'd have some great ones today.
From your lips to God's ears, I hope people are like that, because it's a big swing from what it used to be in the 80s and 90s. You know, it's like, oh, Rick Fox. Oh, my God. You know, with no really tangible reason to support why somebody would have that reaction. So, you know, I thank you so much for your acknowledgement of that. You know, you learn a lot over the years, and it's just not worth it being the crazy, like you. It's not, like you said, not the 80s anymore. And not that I was crazy, but people don't have the time and the patience for that kind of stuff anymore, I think. You know, and we're all getting older. We're settling down a little bit. We don't want to deal with any kind of stuff like that. So it just pays to be nice to everybody as much as possible, right. You know, when possible. You know?
I agree with that.
I feel like I'm on that threshold again, because I finally got a great gig with Freak Show.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit before we get off here.
Yeah.
And you know, the We have a video coming out in about a week, I think, within the week. The album's going to drop, the new album.
Nice.
And there'll be another video after that. Now, booking shows is usually done now, a year out in advance. Mm-hmm. The world is getting ready to flip. I mean, you know, is it going to be World War III? Is it going to be another lockdown? Is it going to be another pathogen, another contagion? What is going on? You know, and if there I'm at the threshold. I'm getting ready to jump out the plane, and somebody goes, nope, not today. Everybody back in the, you know, get out of the pool. So it's like I can't live in that moment because I feel like it's going to get taken away.
Well, let's hope that the world goes to hell after you finish the tour.
Right.
If there is a tour, yeah, I hope so. From what I'm told, this is not going to be like a van and a trailer or a van and a club tour. Mm-hmm. They're opting only for like the larger festival size venue shows, big shows, which is great for me because I missed that whole bus in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, and look at the talent that's in this band. You got a Ronnie Bore shirt from Miss Crazy and Trixie, who's the songwriter and main guitar player. Carlos Cavazo on guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Stett fucking Howland on drums.
Yeah, he's a hell of a player.
Two ex-Wasp members in the band.
That's awesome.
Like that, you know. And they told me how I got the gig. Well, Greg Chason was actually responsible from Badlands. Greg recorded on the album. And just when he finished recording on the album, somebody at Facebook posted a picture of Steel Panther on America's Got Talent. And I happened to write under that thread, and I went, how come I'm not in a band like this? I'm sitting in Missouri with my thumb up my ass. How come I'm not in a band like Steel Panther? And a bunch of people started responding, saying, you know what? You should be in a band like this. You deserve it. You should be in a band.
Right.
Greg Chason saw that thread, tagged my name and tagged Ronnie Borchert's name. And then he contacted me offline later. He says, I'm going to put you in touch with Ronnie. He goes, I just recorded on the album. He goes, I got Atomic Kings. Right. We just finished our album. He goes, you know, and I got the store in Phoenix, you know, Bizarre Guitar. I got Greg is settled in Phoenix. So he has other commitments. He says, I couldn't commit if they wanted me to join the band. So they said, well, can you recommend somebody? He goes, right off the top of my head, first thing I said was Rick Fox. You know, that's divine intervention right there.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And Tara's spirit. He says, Rick, this stuff is right in your wheelhouse. It's like 80s rock. He goes, you know how I play. I know how you – Greg and I come from the same 70s background, bass players. You know, Humble Pie, Grand Funk Railroad, that genre. And so he goes, you could run anywhere with the stuff that I recorded on here. So he goes, it's really, you know, it's not simple. But he goes, you have a feel for it, so this would be perfect for you. He goes, and that's what he told Ronnie. He says, Rick is perfect. He's the guy. Rick is the guy you want for this.
Heck yeah.
And so, you know, originally Freak Show had Jeff LaBar in it.
Oh, really?
He passed away. Yeah, it was Jeff LaBar, Frankie Benelli, and Tony Franklin.
Oh, wow.
So I'm stepping into some big shoes here.
Yeah.
You know, and Ronnie has done some interviews that are out there on YouTube explaining what happened with the breakup of the original Freak Show and why it went that way it did. And he's put out like 25 albums or so. Ronnie's constantly churning out product.
Yeah.
You know, so now it's an opportunity where all of us are really great guys. We're nice guys. We're not out of our minds, that as far as I know. and hopefully we're going to be able to see this thing actually take off and get some flight to it. I'm going to have a blast playing with Stett right there. And I've known Stett before he was in Wasp when he first came to Hollywood.
Oh, wow.
And we were both working for a moving company called Starving Students. we were working off the moving trucks together. So we go that far back, you know, like that. And Stett's really busy. He's out with Metal Church a lot. He lives in Florida and he's got a house in Vegas. So he's back and forth. The guy's always almost as busy as Ron Keel, you know, so like that. And then he's got a bar or a club, some kind of club in Florida that just survived one of the storms they had down there. And his wife, Heidi, helps him run the club. And Heidi was friends with my wife, too. Stett and Heidi came to see me play at one of the NAMM show jams. So the dots keep connecting. We keep bumping into each other. So God, if it wasn't for the freak show gig, I don't know what I'd be doing right now, because there's that much of a music scene here.
Right.
Right.
It's nobody for me to connect with, at least on my level.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, one of the biggest bands out of Springfield is Machine Gun Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're an 80s tribute band. And the singer had spent some time on the L.A. club scene for a while. So he and I are the only people in Missouri that are like L.A. hip.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. You know, he knows how to deliver it to the crowd, play it to the crowd. He's an awesome Jay Stevens. He's an awesome front man. And he's a radio personality on I think it's 104 The Cave out of Springfield. So like that. And, you know, and other than that, there's nothing else to do here. You know, I rehomed Tara's horses and the goat. I have the chickens and the ducks out back, but and the cats. So, you know, I'm like, okay, what do I do now? And the prayers, you know, were answered. I got this gig with Freak Show, and I'm just thankful and privileged to get that. It's just, I told him, I can't wait for us to get in a room together and actually play. We haven't even played together yet.
Wow.
You know, we shot the videos in Reno. The label flew me to Reno about a month ago, and we did the two videos, and then maybe more. I don't know. It depends what Ronnie wants to do and like that. And so we're just waiting to see what happens after that. You know, the album comes. There's some high power press promo people involved with this. I think that worked with Kiss or something. I don't know who it is, but the album's going to get like this huge push, I'm told.
Awesome.
So yeah, and it's a killer album, and it's some really great songs on here. You know, it's got 80s metal. It's got, well, me, I hear bits and pieces of everything because I've been exposed to so much. I hear Rob Zombie. I hear Bowie. I hear Nirvana. I hear Motley Crue and Dokken on this. It's just such a weird span of different types of rock music on this. It's just going to be really interesting. I'd like to see the people's reactions when they finally get a copy of it. And it's being released on vinyl as well.
Nice.
That's cool.
So that's, yeah, I mean, like old style with the you know, the cardboard sleeve and the liner notes and all of that. So I'm looking forward to it. So I hope you guys give us a little rotation there on your shows.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know we will.
Yeah.
Do you have do you have a website that people can go to check out more info on it?
There is a Freak Show Facebook page.
Okay.
I don't have the link in front of me, but I could send it to you.
Yeah, I'll link it in the show notes for this episode.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, anyway, so I hope I've fit the bill here and delivered the goods.
Yeah, I think it was great.
Yeah, you definitely have, man. And I know everybody's going to enjoy it. I know I enjoyed it. This is always fun to do it. Always fun to hang out with you, Rick. Man, I'm so happy for you and the Freak Show thing going on. I'm excited to hear it.
Well, this was fun, man, and I hope all you guys listening, let us know what your favorite stories were and tell us about your brushes with greatness in the comments section when you hear this.
And let us know if this is some we should revisit more than once every 3 years. Yeah. I think it's a cool concept.
Right on. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening.
And as it just so happens to turn out, there actually is a Freak Show song right now that we can share, and it's pretty easy to see why Rick is so excited to become a part of this band. So check this out. Pretty new. It's Freak Show with Loving You, Loving Me. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah. It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.